Welcome to the Hockey Writers Maple Leafs Lounge, a weekly show from our Toronto Maple Leafs writing crew, bringing you the latest news, rumors, trades, player grades, prospects, and much more. From training camp to the playoffs, from draft day to the trade deadline, our team covers everything that happens with the blue and white. Come on in and pull up a chair. Welcome to the Maple Leafs Lounge.
Welcome back to the Maple Leafs Lounge. I am your host, Peter Barrichini, filling in for Kevin Armstrong for the next few weeks, as well as Alex Hobson is here with us. He is on vacation. And like every other week, the Maple Leafs, there's always a lot to talk about with this team, despite them only playing two games this week and the recent success. Always something to talk about as usual. Nothing new with this team. Dominant trip in California, a beatdown against the Colorado Avalanche, and a very entertaining and yet somewhat controversial game against the Minnesota Wild. Alex, that was literally a wild one, no pun intended. What was your takeaway with that one?
I think everybody kind of expected a game like this to be coming at some point because the Leafs have been playing some great hockey lately, and it started off looking a little bleak. Minnesota obviously scored that. They got off to that early lead and they were up 3-0 early on. So I think a lot of people were almost thrown in the towel, myself included. But a couple takeaways I have from that game. I think Jason Spezza, once again, aging like a fine wine. It seems like every time the Leafs are in a rut and someone needs to do something, it's always Jason Spezza. That was a ridiculous bounce for that first goal. And then that second goal just barely found a way in. Another takeaway I have is that blatant missed call on on Marcus Foligno when he crashed the net towards the end of the third period. And he crashed the net and he caught Jack Campbell in the head and there wasn't a goalie interference penalty. And, you know, we've seen goals get taken away for guys not even touching the goalies and stuff. And like I don't want to sit here and ramble on about officiating for the next 45 minutes because we all know how inconsistent it is around the league, not just with the Leafs. And anything I could say about it right now is not something that I've never said before. It was pretty ridiculous display of officiating once again. There definitely should have been a call there because if you're trying to cut down on headshots and stuff, I mean, got to make an example out of guys like that. And once again, the NHL missed the opportunity, but color me surprised.
Yeah, the officiating, I'm not trying to pin the loss on officiating, but as it is with this season and previously before, the officiating is always, you know, the main focus. There was even towards before that hit, there was Nick Bjugstad had his arm wrapped around Jason Spezza. No call there. There was Nick Foligno jumping off the bench early on in the game. Is that warrant suspension? Was there a line change in effect? I do think that, again, NHL's dropping the ball, but they were able to make it up with the slash on Jason Spezza, but still too little too late. Instead of having the power play at the end, they could have had it at the beginning and that could have been a difference maker. For me, I think the biggest thing was the fact that despite it being 3-0 and all three goals were like off really awkward bounces and fortunate opportunities for the Minnesota Wild, the fact that they were able to come back, and as you mentioned, Jason Spezza aging like a fine wine, mounting that comeback with his goal, getting a fortunate bounce off of Cam Talbot's head, and then scoring on the power play and then sending up Austin Matthews, I think that was really fortunate for them. And the fact that this group shows a resiliency. And the fact that, you know, no matter what the situation is, usually we would see them fold in and throw in the towel right away. They fought back hard and continued to fight no matter what. So I think that that's one positive going forward. Despite the loss, I'm happy we got the point, considering, you know, three bounces, two off skates and one off the referee. I'll take the point no matter what.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think a big difference between the game last night and what we may have seen from this team last year, as soon as last year, even the year before, is the fact that they were able to come back and battle back and display that resilience. Because I feel like that's not something we would have seen from teams in the past. You know, you're on the road, you're getting beat up early. I think a lot of former Leafs teams would have just folded and kind of taken their foot off the gas and just kind of let them submitted to the opponent, but didn't happen last night. And I think that's a telling sign. And it's been a good trend this year. I was talking to a couple of buddies I was watching the game with last night. I was saying that the one big difference that I've seen from this year's team compared to last year is all their wins have come with authority, and most of their losses, with the exception of that horrible streak to start the year and the Pittsburgh game, have been hard fought losses. There haven't been too many games where I've been fuming this year sitting at my TV watching. So I think that's a positive sign moving forward. And I think last night was a good example of that, even though they didn't get the win.
The fact that they're able to still be in it in one goal games, whether it's a win or a loss, is a big step forward. And yeah, I totally agree with that. Moving on to, we've talked about Justin Hall before many times on the show. And while we can criticize his decision-making and his play, even last night's game, he was in the news for other reasons. And Frank Saravalli came out with his recent top 15 trade list. I believe it was on the 2nd. So early December, as trade talks heating up, the trade market is on. And Justin Hall came in at number 4. And we've talked about him, and there's been chatter about him and Travis Dermott possibly being on the move, given the fact that they could look to improve, maybe add another top 4, add some forward depth. Do you still see, now that he's actually in the news, do you still see this happening?
I mean, honestly, it should happen because here's the thing. I don't want to be the guy that just rips on one player all the time. And I feel like Justin Hall has kind of absorbed the role of the scapegoat this year for all the struggles the Leafs have had. Not all of them, but you know how every year the Leafs have one guy that always finds himself in the media in a negative way. And I think Hall's been that guy this year. I want the absolute best for him. But the fact of the matter is he's been the worst of the 7 defensemen they have this year. And it's not fair that Timothy Liljegren's been sitting on the bench while Justin Hall's been putting up these efforts back to back to back. And, you know, I think last night was a good example of it. I mean, Justin Hall didn't have a good game. He was given an opportunity to shine, play in his home state in front of fans that he had there for him. And he didn't play a great game. And, you know, especially with the fact that there's a back-to-back, I think you got to get Timothy Liljegren in there. And I honestly think Liljegren's done enough to stay in the lineup. And I think the one thing that he has going for him over Hall is the fact that he's a homegrown and developed prospect. And yes, Justin Hall's had a bit of a path with the Leafs, and, you know, they signed him to an ECHL deal and he worked his way up. It's a great story, but Liljegren was a first round pick in 2017. And the way that they've been developing him, keeping him in the minors, having him focus on his defensive game, I think he's going to be a very, very, very good defenseman for the Leafs eventually. And, you know, if you're at a point now where what's that doing for him? If he's wasting away on the bench for a guy like Justin Hall. And, you know, if you trade him, and regardless of what you get for him, I think it'd be one of those trades where just freeing up that cap space would be enough of a return. But you got to find a way to get Timothy Liljegren back into the lineup because he has been better than Hall as a whole this year. And he's cheaper and he's their prospect. Like, he's the guy that they're banking on filling in the top four role for them eventually. So I think a trade should happen one way or another.
Couple of notes at 5-on-5, 16 goals against, second behind Jake Muzzin, and high danger goals against, he's 6 with 8. So obviously a little bit of concern on the goals, shot attempts, scoring chances. He's struggling. There's no doubt about that. And I do agree at the fact that, you know, Liljegren has deserved more of an opportunity right now. Whether it's going to be in the top 4, whether it's still going to be on the third pairing with Rasmus Sandin, it's still up in the air. But given that what we've seen in a short sample with Jake Muzzin, I think maybe you have a really good option right there for someone to come in and assume the role. Now, it's not to say that Liljegren hasn't had his mistakes. He has, but he's also been able to bounce back in a way that Justin Hall hasn't. And I think that's one thing they really need to consider, that if he has a bad shift, Liljegren shakes it off. Hall continues to do the same things over and over again. And I think that's going to be a major factor. Now, if they do move on from Hall, do you see Liljegren jumping into that top 4 spot, or is it looking to try and get help from another top 4 defender? Maybe not Ben Sherrod, who's asking for a first rounder right now.
Yeah. If the Leafs trade a first round pick for Ben Sherrod, I'm probably going to stop cheering for them. No, but for real, I think for the time being, they're going to sort of have a revolving door. I think they're going to go with what they had When they first originally benched Justin Hall after that game against Chicago, where they were running Riley and Dermott on the top pairing and then Muzzin and Brody on the second pairing. I don't know if I don't think Dermott is sustainable to be on that first pairing long-term, but I think he's all right as a placeholder there for the time being. And I think as they get closer to the deadline, there will probably be a trade for a top four defenseman. But as of right now, I think they're probably going to look to get Liljegren some reps in the top four. I mean, I did just list that top four that didn't have Liljegren in it, but I do think that there are instances where you could run Sandin and Dermott on the bottom pairing, leave Brody on the top pairing with Riley, and give Liljegren some reps next to Muzzin, because I think their two playing styles really feed off each other well. Muzzin can play that stay-at-home physical defensive game, and you can let Liljegren rush the puck a little bit. So I think I'd like to see both of those combinations this year.
And Sheldon Keefe definitely has a good eye of what he's seen with Timothy Liljegren based on what he's coached in the minors as well in the past with the Toronto Marlies. So we've reached the halfway point of the show. Make sure that you're following everything Hockey Writers related, as everyone is constantly putting out articles on the website for you to enjoy. Be sure to like, comment, and follow and subscribe on YouTube. And also don't forget to subscribe to our morning newsletter at morningskate.io, where the content never stops there as well. So jumping back into our Maple Leafs talk, usually it's always when during practice, it's always fun, lighthearted talk, banter, going back and forth. We've seen everybody talk about what's transpired off the ice before, but this week there was a little bit cause of concern where Jake Muzzin and Mitch Marner had a bit of a, you know, tangled up. Mitch Marner got the brunt end of it. He missed the game against the Wild. Nothing serious, but they're just playing a precaution, playing the, you know, the safe approach, being precautionary about everything. But there was a little clip of both Marner and Muzzin jabbering back and forth. I'm pretty sure I know what the answer to this is, Alex, but is this really any cause for concern, or is this just a TMZ headline?
What do you think my answer is going to be?
I'm pretty sure it's just another TMZ headline blown out of proportion.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I mean, if you've ever played hockey before, regardless of what the level was, you know, if it was house league or if you played at a professional level, I think we've all been in an instance where practice gets intense. You battle hard with your teammates and one guy gets a little more physical than he meant to be. And then you exchange words and you move on. That's just how it is. And I'm pretty sure that's what happened in Toronto. The only difference is that there was a camera on it and that person who had the camera put it on Twitter, and the people on Twitter had their say. And now all of a sudden it's a big thing. So yeah, I genuinely don't think there's anything to be concerned about. Marner and Muzzin collided. They beaked at each other a little bit. That's pretty much all it is. Like, I don't know. I know there's some people out there who can try and make a rift out of this and say, oh, there's turmoil in the Leafs dressing room now because two of their teammates beaked at each other in practice. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about. It happens. It's hockey.
Yeah. Given the fact that Sheldon Keefe said that, you know, this is something that's not a concern. I mean, just a few games ago, against the Anaheim Ducks, you saw Jake Muzzin make a strong outlet pass to Mitch Marner. Mitch Marner finds Michael Bunting for a one-timer on the second goal. And you automatically see Mitch Marner point to Jake Muzzin saying, good pass. So I guess, I mean, let's face it, this isn't the first time we've seen rifts happen during a practice, especially. We've even seen like full-blown tilts and fights happen as well in the past. The fact that they were just, you know, gibbering or arguing back and forth, saying, hey, you maybe probably should have done that, whatever. I can't read lips. But given the fact that, you know, it was maybe Mitch Marner just didn't like maybe how intense it was. But then again, it's practice. It's supposed to be intense. We heard how Winston said the practices are just as intense as a game. And that should be the mindset. But also the fact that, you know, again, too many times when I've been playing hockey in a game or practice, yeah, I get mad at my teammates or my friends as well. But then afterwards, we're back to being normal. So it wouldn't surprise me if Jake Muzzin and Mitch Marner just brushed it off and said, you know what? It is what it is. Sorry, man. Let's move on. That's what teammates do. There's no hard feelings. There's nothing against each other. I mean, as interesting as it is, I mean, I don't think it's something that should be a cause or concern, or say, hey, we have an issue with two teammates in the locker room, because everybody loves Mitch. Everybody loves Jake. Everybody is very fond of everyone on the team as well. So the fact that they've got that, you know, camaraderie, the factor that they always support each other no matter what, I think that's going to go big for them. And I think this is just one of those things where, you know, it's for the better. It helps them grow as a team.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, if you're not at a point in practice when things are getting so intense that you start beaking at each other and you start, you know, there's a little bit of tension between the teammates and stuff, I feel like you're not really an aggressive hockey team. I feel like I don't know. I'm not going to pretend like I've been in any sort of practice environment for Stanley Cup winning teams, but I'd be willing to bet that every team that's won a Stanley Cup in the past 10 years has had at least one instance like that, that just doesn't get talked about because it's not in Toronto.
Oh, definitely. And I can, and let's face it, Toronto, anything that happens in Toronto, like I said, at the top of the show, we're not short of anything that happens with the team. Mm-hmm. There's always something new, but I think, I mean, again, it's something that happens all the time. I don't think it should just be blown out of proportion just because it is the Maple Leafs.
No, couldn't agree more.
Moving on to one of our final topics right now. And we talked about Peter Mrazek. We talked about Joseph Woll and how maybe he's probably coming up and trying to take the reins from Mrazek. But the good news on the Mrazek front is that he is cleared to resume play, being sent down to the Toronto Marlies for an emergency stint coming off the IR. I just want to get your take, Alex. Obviously, we know that, you know, stuff like this happens where they want to get their feet wet, get back into game shape before they get called back up. Obviously, this is the right move, but I just want to get your take on what to expect from Mrazek from here on out, given the fact that he came back from the injury, re-aggravated it, and the assumption is that he is going to be healthy from here on out.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd hope that he'd be healthy from here on out, because I think he came back probably a little too quick at first. He re-aggravated it pretty much right away, and then Campbell was forced to pretty much start for the entire month of November, with the exception of a couple Joseph Woll starts here and there. And I mean, the Leafs paid $3.8 million over 3 years to be for this guy to be the backup goalie, or at the very least be a tandem goalie with Campbell. So I think as long as he can stay healthy, I see no reason why he can't be a good goalie. And, you know, I don't know if I'd expect him to go out there and put up the same numbers that Campbell's put up this year, because the work that he's done this year has been ridiculous. But I think at the very least, you're going to be able to see him hold down the fort as sort of your 1B guy. And maybe Campbell doesn't have to start every single game from here on out, right? You're going to, I think you're going to have a goalie that you can rely on for, say, one out of every three or four games. And I think you know, we've seen that the Leafs have been able to play tight defensive hockey this year, and they haven't needed their goalies to bail them out as much as they have in the past. So I think as long as Mrazek comes back healthy and he holds down the fort and he just plays, I don't want to say average, but I think as long as he just does his job and makes the saves that he needs to make, I think he'll be all right this year.
Aside from that 7-1 blowout against the Pens, the defense has relatively been stable in front of the goaltenders, no matter who's been in net. And I think the main concern from here on out is you worry about that depth, because you wanted to try and avoid that. I mean, you avoided something with Jack Campbell and Nick Foligno. Mike Foligno or Marcus Foligno. I don't know Marcus. Why I said Nick. Marcus. Sorry about that.
That's all good.
You avoided something right there. And if Jack Campbell is out, you don't have Mrazek, who's down under the conditioning stint. You have Joseph Woll, who's up with the team, but has been dealing with some stiffness in his day-to-day. And you have Michael Hutchison as the backup. So in essence, at this point, your top three goaltenders, if you want to throw Joseph Woll in there, are basically injured, and you have to rely on Michael Hutchison. So that depth comes into question. So the fact that he's coming back right now is very fortunate, just in case something does happen. And if Jack Campbell does start to feel something after that Foligno hit, you at least have Peter Mrazek as insurance to go in, and Woll and or Hutchison to be the backup for the future. I do think that, you know, they dodged a major bullet here, because this is something that could have affected them in the long run. And even though they have great play outside of the net, you worry about that based on what happened last year. You thought that you were getting something with Jack Campbell, and you did, given the fact that he had his injury concerns, Frederik Anderson went down, and then you had subpar goaltending from both David Rittich and Michael Hutchison. So I think there's something to look forward to that. And like you mentioned, just maybe just getting that consistency factor in as well, because there were times where he looked good in the games in Ottawa and Detroit. It's just they may have wanted to get a little bit more out of him. And yeah. I think that right now, if he's healthy, if he does well during his stint with the Marlies, then crisis averted. But until then, I think they should really still monitor the situation just in case something does happen.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's really easy to forget about how important a third goalie can be. But I mean, you look at last season at the start of the year when Jack Campbell and Freddie Anderson were injured. And granted, all due respect to Michael Hutchinson, because he went out there and he had like, I think, three or four good games in a row. And he did. Michael Hutchinson, you know, he was not the same goalie in 2020-21 as he was the year before. He was a much better goalie last year. And yeah, I mean, as much as I lost my train of thought there for a second, but as good as he was over his little stint last year, remember how much panic Leafs Nation was in when Freddie Anderson and Jack Campbell were both injured? And the thought was, yeah, man, we have to rely on Michael Hutchinson to start these next four games. Mm-hmm. I mean, Leafs are lucky that he came out and he played the way he did, because that could have been a messy situation otherwise. And it really shows you that you can't take your third goalie for granted, because one injury and all of a sudden they're in just as big a role as your starter.
And there were games last year. I mean, he managed to play really well against the Edmonton Oilers, and he went on a good stretch and he got key wins for the Maple Leafs in the critical time. And I think that's where the issue lies with Michael Hutchinson, is just the consistency factor. And the hope is that he could get to that form, because now with a better team in front of him, you want to try and say, hey, no matter who we put in net, we got a team in front of you that's going to get the job done night in, night out, no matter what. Yeah. But if it does come to that point, do you feel comfortable with either Wall or Hutchison assuming the reins should something happen to Campbell and or Mrazek long term?
I mean, I would feel that's a really tough question to answer, because I think the and the or with Mrazek and Campbell is I think there's a big difference between those two words right there, because if Campbell and Mrazek are out and you're asking me if I feel confident with Joseph Wallace, the starter, I think by default, I have to say no, just because we've only seen him play three games at the NHL level. And unless he can pull a Jordan Binnington run out of his hat, then I mean, you're asking a lot of a guy who's only played three NHL games. Having said that, if it was one of Campbell or Mrazek, I mean, we saw Joseph Wall fill in as the backup goalie recently. Jack Campbell's proven that he can take on a Freddie Anderson like workload, and Peter Mrazek, I don't know if he's capable of that yet. So we'll have to, I mean, if Campbell ever gets injured, we'll have to see what Mrazek's capable of. But overall, I think I don't know if I'd say I'm comfortable with Wall being the starting goalie should both of those guys go down, but I'm okay with him as the backup for the time being. Having said that, I wouldn't feel that way down the stretch towards the playoffs, but right now I'm fine with it.
The good news is right now the Maple Leafs, they went on that massive stretch, 12-2, I believe, in the month of November. They're sitting third overall in the league standings, third in the conference, the Eastern Conference, second in the Atlantic Division, 17-6-2, plus 21 goal differential. That was a lot lower before. So I think now that the fact that a lot is going great for this team right now, and I think because we always focus in on the negatives and what's happened in the past, I think maybe we should just let it ride the course and see what plays out from here on out. I do think that Jack Campbell is going to be fine. I do think Peter Mrazek should bounce back. And let's face it, if Waller Hutchison does go in, we have a team capable that's able to shut it down. So I think right now we have some positives to look forward to. And I think maybe we focused on, you know, a what if scenario that many may not like. It's something that could possibly happen. But I think right now the Maple Leafs are in a good spot that I think they can handle that what if scenario.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
We are approaching the end of our show. Actually, that's it for this week on the Maple Leafs Lounge. Thank you all for tuning in once again. Be sure to leave a comment or question down below. We always love to hear your thoughts and your suggestions, and we want to answer them. Whatever's on your mind, we will take into consideration and look at it and talk about it next week. For Alex Hobson, I'm Peter Barrichini, and a shout out to Kevin Armstrong, who is down enjoying his vacation. We hope to see him back very soon, but until then, we will see you all next week on the Maple Leafs Lounge.